Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast of the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. I'm David Bowes, your host. Today, we're going to talk about whales. Evolutionary biologists are confident that whales evolved from fully terrestrial creatures to fully aquatic creatures in a relatively short period of time. Confidence in this scenario has led whales to become another icon in evolution, and yet a new discovery may throw a bone in the entire theory. Pun intended. Here to talk about it with me is Casey Luskin from the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. Casey, you've talked about the evolutionary problems involving evolution in whales and how whales are an icon of evolution. Why don't we first address how it is that whales became one of the new icons of evolution and how it is that they think whales evolved from terrestrial animals?
Sure. Well, first, let's kind of paint the broader picture here. According to the standard evolutionary story, fish evolved into amphibian-like creatures maybe 380 million years ago. And then, of course, amphibians evolved into reptiles, which evolved into mammals. And then some of those mammals then crawled back into the sea and evolved into whales. So you have this story where basically tetrapod organisms walked out of the sea and then walked back into the sea as whales. So the reason why we've heard a lot about whales over the last 10 years or so is because evolutionists claim that there is a series of fossils which document how land mammals allegedly evolved into fully aquatic whales.
Describe some of the animals that supposedly create this fossil record that allows us to see the whales go from terrestrial mammals to sea creatures.
Well, the series starts with an organism called Pachycetus. Pachycetus was basically a fully terrestrial land mammal that lived about 50 million years ago. It doesn't really look like a whale. It has really no resemblance to a whale, apart from some interesting features of its ear bones. But it's basically a fully terrestrial land mammal. When the series starts to get interesting for the evolutionists is when you look at a group called the Ambulocetids or the Remingtonocetids or the Protocetids, and these are supposedly semi-aquatic organisms which have features of both land mammals and aquatic organisms. So this is where evolutionists would claim that you see evidence that land mammals are beginning to spend more and more time in the water and are eventually evolving into fully aquatic mammals such as whales. So the beginning of this series is supposedly around 50 million years ago, and then at 40 million years ago, you finally get the first fully aquatic whales in the fossil record. These are called the Basilosaurids. So you've got about a 10 million year period there from the beginning to the end of this series, which allegedly shows how whales went from full land mammals into fully aquatic whales.
That doesn't sound like too much of a period of time in terms of evolutionary scale. I understand different things evolve at different rates, but isn't this pretty fast evolution for a creature of this kind?
Yeah, it really is. As a matter of fact, I remember when I was an undergraduate taking a paleontology course where my professor actually talked about how the evolution of whales was astonishingly rapid. So this is even surprising to evolutionists how quickly you go from, you know, your sort of run-of-the-mill land mammal to a fully aquatic whale that's got all these specialized adaptations and features to spend all of its time in the water. And its entire life cycle in the water. As a matter of fact, a whale can't even live out of the water. So you have some pretty dramatic changes going on, and yeah, 10 million years, it might sound like a long time, but in reality, that really boils down to, at most, maybe about 400,000 generations. Now, when you consider that the effective size of the breeding population of an organism like whales is relatively low, what you come up with is that there are simply not enough generations or individuals in which to have the proper mutations arising that would be necessary to generate all of these features to allow a land mammal to be converted into a fully aquatic mammal. So basically there's not enough time, not enough rolls of the dice or probabilistic resources, so to speak, to go from a land mammal to a whale in simply that amount of time and that number of generations. The number of changes that you would need is far too many for the amount of time available. And by the way, this is not necessarily my argument, although I think it's a strong argument. A lot of these ideas have been developed by one of Discovery Institute's fellows, Dr. Richard Sternberg, who holds two PhDs in evolution-related fields. So I think that it's a very strong case that when you look at the population genetics and the mathematics, it doesn't really matter what what fossils you have, mathematically speaking, it is not possible that an unguided Darwinian process could take a land mammal to a whale in such a short period of a time.
Just to paint a more specific picture, what are some of the traits that would have to change for the land mammal to become the whale, according to this shaky theory?
Well, David, I'm going to give you what is very much a partial list here, because there's a lot of features that we need to change. I think these are just some of the more interesting ones that show just the dramatic scale of evolutionary changes that would need to take place. First, you would need the emergence of a blowhole with the musculature and nerve control to properly use the blowhole. You'd need a modification of the eye for permanent underwater vision. You need the ability to drink seawater. You need forelimbs transformed into flippers. You need the reduction of hind limbs and pelvis. You need the ability to nurse young underwater. You need the origin of the tail flukes and musculature. You need the origin of blubber for temperature insulation. And by the way, the temperature insulation and the changes that would take place when an organism decides to start spending all of its time in the water really goes way beyond just evolving a lot of extra blubber. Whales have a whole specialized suite of features that allow them to control and regulate their body temperature and regulate the temperature of specific organs within whales so that they can still function properly when they're swimming, you know, in these deep, cold, underwater depths. So, again, this is just a very partial list of a few of the adaptations that would need to change. There's a lot more when you actually look at the full list. To convert a land mammal into a whale, you would basically need to completely change the organism's body plan. This is not a minor rewiring or two. This is a radical restructuring of a mammalian body plan.
And now, thanks to this new fossil discovery, the timeline, the evolutionary timeline that was shaky before, just got a whole lot shakier. Describe why.
Yeah, there's been a report that came out in the last month or so that a whale jawbone of a fully aquatic whale was discovered in Antarctica, and it dates to about 49 million years ago. Well, this is really interesting because, as we said earlier, the first step in this alleged series going from land mammals to whales, the Pachycetids, they appear about 50 million years ago, and then these alleged intermediate stages start around 49 million years ago. Well, now you have a fully aquatic whale also appearing at 49 million years ago, which means that the amount of time available for whales to evolve from land mammals is not 10 million years. It's actually much less than 10 million years. It's probably much less than even 5 million years. We may be just be looking at a couple of million years allowed by the fossil record to go from a fully terrestrial mammal into a fully aquatic whale. So this problem that there's not enough time allowed by the fossil record to allow for all of these anatomical changes to evolve just got a lot worse.
If the timeline problem didn't change the theory before, do you expect this new discovery to cause people to rethink the previous timeline or the theory that the whales evolved from these land mammals?
No, I've really yet to see any evidence that some of the experts in whale evolution are really at all even interested in tackling this question of the timeline available for whale evolution. I've seen no interest in them whatsoever. The only people who actually seem interested in asking these kinds of hard questions that really hit at very core issues in population genetics and evolutionary biology, the only people that are interested in asking these kinds of scientific questions seem to be Darwin skeptics and proponents of intelligent design. Now, I'd love it if evolutionary biologists would begin to ask these questions and start treating Darwinian evolution as a science, where you can actually consider the possibility that it might be wrong. And maybe it'll turn out to be right. I mean, who knows? I just love to see people treating these questions as legitimate scientific issues and then doing a scientific investigation. I think that's fun. I think it's fascinating. It really piques my scientific interest. And I wish that evolutionary biologists would ask these questions. But so far, I've seen no evidence that any of them are really interested in doing that. So it remains to the ID proponents to really raise the kinds of questions within the Darwinian paradigm that show that it might have problems.
Not being a scientist myself, but I look at this timeline that you've unveiled for us, and it seems to me that what it points to is separate species, not that whales were evolved from these particular animals.
Yeah, there's not necessarily, I mean, how do you know that this series is truly a sequence of ancestors and descendants in the fossil record? And I'm not saying you can't ever know anything. You can make an argument, and perhaps some arguments can be made that these organisms are related. But when you see that the fossil record is really not bearing out a sequence, either in terms of the sequential order in the fossil record or whether Darwinian evolution has enough time to serve as the mechanism that could cause these organisms to be related to one another, I think that you have legitimate cause to question this supposed series of fossils and whether it's really a series of ancestors and descendants. All we really see in the fossil record is a few data points. We see these species. Frankly, some of them are highly reconstructed with an evolutionary bias in terms of the way that they understand what these organisms look like and what their lifestyles were. Maybe those reconstructions are right, maybe they're not. I think, though, that if we were to take the evolutionary bias out of this and we're able to ask hard questions about the sufficiency of the Darwinian mechanism to change these species so quickly, you might actually even get different understandings of the way these organisms lived and what they really looked like and how they behaved when they lived millions of years ago.
Well, judging from these new timeline problems, it looks like the evolutionary biologists are in for a whale of a problem themselves. Casey Luskin, thanks so much.
Well, thanks for having me.
Hi, this is Casey Luskin with ID the Future. As the year of 2011 comes to an end, I want to thank you for listening to Discovery Institute's ID the Future podcast. It's been gratifying this past year to hear comments from students who tell us that ID the Future helps them get through their pro-Darwin biased courses and keeps them informed of the ID world. I hope that ID the Future has benefited you this past year as well. It takes money to create ID the Future, as well as all of the other work we do here at Discovery Institute. For example, much of the work that I do defending academic freedom for pro-ID scientists doesn't happen in a vacuum. We need the support of ID the Future listeners to keep these important projects going. If you'd like to make a contribution, go to www.idthefuture.com and click the donate button. Just go to idthefuture.com and click the orange donate button on the left-hand side. Thanks again for listening and for supporting us this past year.
I hope you've enjoyed this edition of ID the Future, a podcast of the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. Copyright 2011, the Discovery Institute. If you'd like more information, or if you'd like to support the Discovery Institute, please visit discovery.org/CSC.